So with that, I'd like to call to order the April action meeting of the Commonwealth Transportation Board, and we will begin with public commentary. I know there's a Mr. Bob Holton here who wants to speak to the board, and a Mr. Bell, if they're still here, and anybody else who wishes to address the board. Welcome, Mr. Holton.
Hi, I'm Bob Holton. I'm the town manager of Bridgewater, and I've been so for 36 years. I'm here on behalf of the town council and citizens, and that's what you would expect me to say, but I'm also here with the full knowledge and support of many others. One name you'll know, most that you won't. Bill Stone, you may remember as a former board member, but I know him as the president of Bridgewater College, and we've worked together from his first day as president until, and we'll work together until his last. All along, Dr. Stone has been a supporter of this project. He's appeared at meetings to speak on behalf of it, and if you look deep in your files, you'll see a letter from him also offering his support. Now, he's doing so not just because he's doing a favor for us, but because each day, 300 and some tractor-trailer trucks drive down Dinkle Avenue, and each day, on the hour, his students cross that same street. He considers the current situation a safety hazard and urges you to approve the Bridgewater bypass so that this conflict can be removed. Now, you don't know John Barlow. He's the principal of a private school a couple of blocks down from the college, but he sent you a letter as well and feels the same way, as did Bridgewater Retirement Community, as did Purdue, as did Marshalls, the Board of Supervisors, and many others. So there's a lot of support for this project. And I represent these people, at least in spirit, because they've asked me to. But I think I also represent a group of people who would never appoint me as their representative because, frankly, they don't trust government officials. And that's our local Mennonite community. Now, there are many levels of car accident, with none being good. But I guess it's just varying degrees of horrible, but among the most horrible is a collision between a vehicle and a horse and buggy. I have the unfortunate experience of having seen more than one of these. The large Mennonite community travels our roads. They travel the three roads that currently also bear truck traffic. And at the onset of discussions about this project, one thing that we wanted to ensure was that there was a safe route for horse and buggy traffic. And if you will look at the plans, and I'm sure your staff will point this out to you, there's a 14-foot paved lane separate from the highway that for the first time in many, many years will allow a safe route for horse and buggy traffic, as well as bikers, joggers, and others who are non-motorized. We think it's a good idea, and we encourage you to approve it today. But you know what? There are a lot of good ideas that will probably come before you this meeting and in the ones to come. Not all will be funding for a very good reason. This is a horrible economic time that we're going through, and I'm well aware of your budget situation. But unless our nation fails, these days will disappear and better times will return, and there will be funding for VDOT and for projects. But there's another reason that this should go forward, and that's that we are your partner in this and have been from the beginning. We've already invested $1.3 million to construct the first 1,000 feet of this road. And as long ago as the 1990s, we have pledged that we will do our best to obtain the right-of-way and, where possible, extend the road. In fact, the common consensus among your local officials is that we'll try to get the road built and leave the bridges for you. And we hope that by dividing the labor and the expense in this manner, we'll eventually get this project built and the conflicts that currently exist will disappear from our community. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Holton. Appreciate your coming all the way to make those comments on behalf of the town. Is there a Mr. Bell here? Welcome, Mr. Bell.
Thank you. I have a handout coming around I want to share with you. In the context of everything that you're wrestling with, I feel inadequate right now as to what I want to highlight with you and share with you. I'm the head of school at Nansman Suffolk Academy in Suffolk, Virginia. I am brand new there. I arrived in July. And beneath the gifts that were awaiting me was an environmental impact report and a 460 corridor report that is coming through the back our back lawn, if you don't mind me saying. It This I want to share too was, I think, thoughtfully and thoroughly done and prepared by VDOT. I went through the hearings, the website was very impressive, and I know this has been a long and arduous task. But as someone who's new to the area, I just do want to share with you that Nesmith Separate Academy is 43 years old. Nothing's pretty when you're turning 43, but as we turn 43, we are thinking about our future and who we are as a school. With that in mind, we are a rather large independent school of about 1,000 souls, 700 families. We serve people from Edenton, North Carolina, to a number of North Carolina communities, along with Newport News, Franklin, Smithfield, and so forth. So we have a big regional footprint in the area as an independent school. A big part of our mission is being an affordable school as well. We are socially and economically diverse. And with that in mind as well, we have on the back of this page that I've given you, I've shown you, is a map of our school and the proposed 460, which is going to come through through some of our property. While it's taking out two athletic fields, that was not so much my concern, but as I began to walk around the back end of the property, my chief concern about this, and I don't know that it was addressed in the environmental impact, was the noise and the vibrations that were going to be part of our program once this highway came in. We have an outdoor classroom, which we've highlighted, which will largely be, I think, inadequate with the road there, along with the lower school playground, along with the fact that our 3- and 4-year-old early school program is only 300 feet from the road. Nap time is very important for 3- and 4-year-olds, along for myself. But again, the noise abatement is a concern for us, and I don't know that it was considered in the environmental impact. We did offer a alternative, largely in conversations, and I will say light conversations. I do not represent the Suffolk City, nor our neighbors, but I know that in conversations, as I began to sit down and talk with members of the Suffolk government and what have you, they were concerned about the interchange as to how 460 was going to land, if you will, on 58. The original proposal, I think, has those two interchanges literally being next door to each other, creating a spaghetti junction, and along with narrowing a business corridor in that area as well. So I just wanted to really stand before you, introduce myself to you, and share with you what our concerns are for this school down in Suffolk, Virginia. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Does anybody else wants to address the Commonwealth Transportation Board? Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Matt Moskaitis with the Northern Virginia Transportation Alliance. The NVTA greatly appreciates the effort that VDOT, VDRPT, the Commonwealth Transportation Board, have expended on the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And while we appreciate the thousands of hours devoted to this effort, we also know that only a small number of people truly understand the magnitude and difficulty of this undertaking, and that most of that small group are assembled in this room today, and we appreciate your efforts. We offer a few observations on the ARRA. First, given that this was initially sold as an immense effort to rebuild the nation's infrastructure, the Alliance finds it distressing that only roughly 6% of the $787 billion is dedicated to transportation. Secondly, the Alliance appreciates the fact that some funds must be used to rehabilitate deficient pavements and bridges. However, it is tragic that by refusing to provide adequate funding, the Virginia General Assembly has allowed the Commonwealth's transportation network to fall into such a state of disrepair. The hundreds of millions of federal dollars that should be going to improving mobility must be instead relegated to patching and gluing. Third, the Alliance is pleased to see that phases 3 and 4 of the Fairfax County Parkway Environmental Proving Grounds Missing Link segment are being recommended, in hopes that the Quantico BRAC project will also be added. Fourth, of possible additional ARRA projects, the Alliance recommends the Route 28 grade crossing in Prince William County. Projects that do not appear on the list but should include the Fairfax County Parkway, Monument Drive, Fair Lakes Interchange, Route 50 widening in Fairfax and Prince William Counties, the Prince William County Parkway, and Route 28 widening west of Manassas. Each of these projects represents a sound stimulus investment and should be added. Finally, the Alliance strongly endorses the basic principle raised yesterday by Chairman Homer and others of the importance of the Commonwealth and the CTB in particular in exercising a greater ownership interest and role in the transportation network that it is responsible for planning, constructing, maintaining, and improving. Localities, local officials, and legislators are all locally oriented. The Commonwealth, and only the Commonwealth, has the ability and responsibility to provide the bigger picture's perspective and leadership necessary to create a well-connected transportation system that works. And we urge the CTB and Commonwealth to do just that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Muscatis. Is there anybody else wants to address the Commonwealth Transportation Board? If not, we'll entertain a motion to approve the March minutes.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And action item one is a commemorative naming of the Freedman's Village Bridge of State Route 27. Is there a motion?
I make a motion to approve that very important designation.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Could, Mr. Chairman, could I take just a second
Absolutely.
To tell you how important this is? In 1862, the District of Columbia, which at that time did include Arlington County, there was the abolition of slavery in 1862 in the district. And that brought an influx, a significant influx, of freed blacks as well as slaves. And they immigrated to the area in large numbers. And the government at the time allocated a large area, now south where Arlington Cemetery is, which is part of it at least, and identified that as the community for these freed slaves, therefore freed men. That's how the Freedman Village got its name. And it became a very vibrant community. This was a place where people came who were blacksmiths, wheelwrights, carpenters. There was a school that started out at 30 and ended up with 900 students, was a very, very vibrant community and grew and prospered. In 1888, it was disbanded, but those members who first came to Freedman's Village, I'm sure, spread all over the country. But a number of them remained in Arlington and the general Northern Virginia area and formed sort of the aristocracy of the communities, and they are still in the leadership positions in the professions and politically. And so it is very important that we do try to recognize the significance of this part of our history and identify it by naming of this bridge, which is in fact very, very near where the Freedman's Village existed for about 40 years.
Thank you.
Very cool.
Very nice. Yeah.
Action item two is a commemorative bridge naming, and some of you may recall the Cat Point Creek Bridge had its own special history, and this is special history with PFC Charles Ellsworth Bowen. Is there a motion?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item three is on a through truck restriction in Gloucester County. Are there any questions of Ms. Sorrell? If not, is there a motion?
Moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item four are the Economic Development Access deallocation in Halifax County. Are there any questions of Mr. Estes on the deallocation?
I move approval.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
And action item 5A is land conveyance in Rockbridge County. Are there any questions of Mr. Bennett?
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 5B is also a conveyance in Fairfax County. Are there any questions of Mr. Bennett?
I move its approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 6 is a limited access control change and land conveyance. There was a last minute change to that resolution. That's the new business item. I'm sorry. Are there any questions, Mr. Bennett, on action item 6?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 7 is a Hot Lanes parking study. There was a question about this yesterday, about the location of additional commuter parking areas in the I-95 corridor. This is perfect timing. Are there any questions of Ms. Buescher?
I move this approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 8 is the Route 1 Fuller Heights Road relocation in the six-year program. Are there any questions of Ms. Buescher?
Mr. Chair, I would like to offer a modification to the resolution. Right now there's two gates, just for everyone's information, there are two gates in which Mainside Marine Corps is accessed. And at one of those gates, which is Russell Road, they're about to initiate a major gate rebuild project, which is going to close that down for a period of time. So I do want to offer a slight modification to this, just that would provide for coordination with the base on the Fuller Road, because the Fuller Road gate is the other access, to ensure that to the extent possible we maintain at least a certain degree of flow of traffic. Otherwise we're going to have a significant Route 1 and I-95 problem if we've got congestion on both. So if would be appropriate, I'll just, at the end, I'd like to state and that staff coordinate with Marine Corps Base Quantico in scheduling the project.
And that would be
at the end of the now, therefore, be it resolved.
Okay, so that would be the add-on to that resolve sentence.
Yes, sir.
You got that?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, and then action item 9 is on the Recovery Act funding. This is the amendment to the six-year program. You had an extensive presentation on this. Are there any final questions of Ms. Buescher? Is there a motion?
I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Action item 10 is the budgetary amendments. Again, paralleling these projects and just amending the overall VDOT administrative and operational budget to accommodate these changes. Are there any questions of Ms. Buescher?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And action item 11, again, you had the presentation by Mr. Hill yesterday on the rural and small urban transit, about half of those funds. Any questions of Mr. Hill?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And action item 12 is the location approval for the Bridgewater bypass. Are there any questions of Mr. Long?
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Mr. Chairman.
Just a point of discussion before we vote on this, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to ask my colleagues to consider a deferral of this action for a period of 90 days, not because I necessarily think that the decision to locate this bypass is a bad one, but frankly, at least in my view, some of the planning that's occurred along the I-81 corridor, going back to the adoption of the the environmental impact statement on I-81, which I view as badly flawed and something that this board should not have approved. And other questions, generally speaking, about traffic and truck planning in the corridor. There remain, in my mind, significant questions about the credibility of the freight rail diversion study and its conclusions. And Mr. Chairman, a long history, not just in this corridor, but throughout the Commonwealth, of bypasses being the default position every time we have a congestion problem. I think current thinking suggests that that's not always the case. As I say, this may be a perfectly appropriate solution at this point, but I do note that even in the town of Bridgewater's letter in support of this, they acknowledge, it says, we also know that the Bridgewater bypass won't be built in the near future. I would like for this board and the board members to have some additional time to look at this decision, not only the decision as it's been analyzed to date, but there's another part of this that's, I think, very important and should be very important to this board, which is I don't know enough about this to know what the status of the current land use controls and zoning is along this bypass corridor.
We are facing huge problems and huge costs as a commonwealth because of the fact that we have, in some cases, radically different objectives between local municipalities and the commonwealth relating to the use of corridors where, from the commonwealth's perspective and based on its investment, throughput is critical. From the locality's perspective, many times these bypasses and arterials are seen as a tax base producing opportunity with a lot of access management problems created. In the long run, we're going to need more cooperation between localities and the commonwealth, and possibly move to a model where the commonwealth would and should expect commitments from the municipalities where these investments, these road investments, are made with state and federal funds as to what the future of the land use controls on the corridor would be. Don't know if any of that's been explored in this case, but if it should turn out that in fact that this bypass is the appropriate transportation decision, it would seem to me that it's also appropriate that as part of that location approval, we explore with the local municipalities ways in which the Commonwealth can assure, can ensure over time that the throughput potential isn't burdened. Some may view this as late in the process to raise this issue, and had I been more familiar with it, I would have raised it sooner. But given the fact that this project, frankly, has no prospect of being funded in the near term, I don't think that a postponement of a period of 90 days to at least review and address some of those issues is unrealistic. I know that there are some concerns about moving along even in the absence of funding to get the corridor identified, and I respect those concerns, but I also think that that 90 days isn't going to adversely impact that process. And so that would be my suggestion to my colleagues, and I'm not going to offer that as a friendly amendment to this because I don't think it'll be accepted. Friendly amendment.
I appreciate
even
that.
Even among friends.
So is that a substitute is there motion? We have a motion and a second on the floor. Are you offering a substitute motion?
It could be offered as a substitute. Yes, I guess that would be the best way to do it, is offered as a substitute.
Everybody understand the issue here? Is there a second for the substitute motion?
I'll second.
Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Mr. Schwartz was kind enough to share his concern with me about this, but I would compare his concern and his desire to look at the environmental impact study for Interstate 81 and the variety of other issues that he's talking about with land planning as taking a huge fly swatter to try to hit a tiny fly, which is a little small community of Bridgewater, that everybody in that community of any significance involved in public service has said this is a good idea. The Mennonite community, the Mennonite retirement community, Bridgewater College, the school, the industries that are in the area, they created a problem when a number of trucking-related companies that are vital to the work employment in that area were located in a place on Route 42 that creates a problem for getting through the little town. And all they're asking to do, in fact, is to cut through an area that would make that issue a lot safer for everybody. And there's the Board of Supervisors, the town, every entity has agreed that this is smart. They recognize that it's not a typical bypass. And those of you that are in Northern Virginia and other places thinking about this as a bypass, this is a little small cut-through, in effect, that eliminates a huge safety problem for a community. The sooner we go ahead and give them approval to start saying to people who want to develop in that community, we want this corridor protected because we're going to correct this problem, and we're going to do it ourselves if we have to over 10 or 15 years by doing it piecemeal. That's all this community is asking to do. And to delay them 90 days doesn't make any sense at all, even though I respect what he's trying to address with these broader issues of land planning and the environmental study for 81. We need to give these people permission to know where this road's going to go. And I hope you'll vote not for the substitute motion, but for the original motion that's on the floor.
Any other questions or comments?
More of a question. Is there pending zoning or anything that that is out there right now where would require us to identify this corridor within the next 90 days versus, I mean, we know the funding is not going to be going to contract in 90 days, so that's not a hindrance. Is there some sort of land use?
Yeah, can we ask Mr. Holton that question, if you could come up and speak into the microphone, please?
Essentially, what's the practical impact of deferring for 60 or for 90 days? What is the true impact of?
Could you speak into the microphone, sir? Could you speak into the microphone, please?
The true impact, assuming you would approve this in 90 days, is minimal. However, I've been working on this since 1985. We have really addressed every question, including our financial support. $1.3 million may sound very small to you, but to us, it was a lot of money to ensure that this route goes where your department has planned that it goes. So I would take a 90-day delay as an insult to start, but an insult that we don't deserve, because everybody in our community supports this. Of course, you've been inundated with emails from those outside the community who oppose every transportation project in our area. So I would encourage you, please vote for this and let us start working or continue our work to get the right-of-way so that this project can eventually be built.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, this colleague, Ms. Schwartz, has got some questions on this. Would a 30-day deferral in which can get some of that information and come to comfort with the project as designed, would that meet the concerns that Mr. Schwartz has?
If I may, we have a motion and a second for a 90-day deferral.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, if I might address the substitute motion, let me say to anybody who's here representing the town of Bridgewater and the community, certainly my concerns aren't intended as an insult to you in any way, and I hope you'll appreciate that. But nonetheless, the concerns that I've raised are in fact concerns that this board has raised any number of times as we've addressed very difficult issues of asset management and corridor management. We're now spending $1.5 million to study how we're going to solve a very, very serious problem on the 29 corridor, because frankly, as I think all of us would acknowledge, the Commonwealth didn't put the plans and processes in place to protect the investment that was made. I don't want to replicate those errors. There's no intent here to single out Bridgewater in that regard, but you have to start somewhere. I would like to have to at least plead the case for what I regard as a relatively small period of time to look at those issues in this particular case. I respect Mr. Davis's comments in opposition to my proposal. If the board doesn't see fit to extend this, I would hope that we would address these issues more broadly in any case. But I do think there is value to the Commonwealth here in some respects the type of bypass that this will be, which will be more of a local road bypass, in some case ways is attractive, but in some ways is even more concerning because of the potential for zoning on the ground without adequate rules in place to over time simply turn it into a sprawl generator that diminishes its effectiveness after the Commonwealth has invested $60 million to build it. So that's the concern. It's not an attempt to single out Bridgewater, and I really don't think that anything will be changed in terms of the potential timing of this, given the funding situation, if we take a short period of time, 90 days, to look at this a bit further.
Okay.
Final comment. I hope you'll vote against the delay of this project. 90 days will not give any answers to the questions that Mr. Schwartz is seeking, because those are much broader issues that take years to address. And most of them have been addressed in some way in this little tiny project for this little small community of 5,000 people or less. And I certainly hope you'll vote against the substitute motion.
Okay. There's a motion and second on the substitute motion, which is a 90-day delay. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Two ayes. All opposed, say no.
No.
Motion fails.
The main motion, question on the original motion.
The original motion is to approve the location approval for the Bridgewater bypass. Is there a motion?
It's all right.
It's already on. Excuse me. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed. Okay.
One opposed?
Okay.
Thank you very much. I would say, Mr. Schwartz, you're welcome to bring up under new business an item to on a parallel track, look at the access management and associated land use issues. We could make that request.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure, Mr. Schwartz, that I will work to be sure that, working with the town, that we address those zoning issues to protect this corridor and to make certain that what you were proposing doesn't happen. But knowing that community, I can almost assure you it won't happen, because they have protected that community in a beautiful way and will continue to do so in future generations.
Thank you. Okay, action item 13 is on bids. Is Mr. Coburn here with us? Is a good month or a bad month, Mr. Coburn?
It's been a very interesting and active month, sir.
It was making us nervous when you had
some good, some bad.
Okay, we have a number. We have a number of substitutes, including for page one. Are all of our pages substituted, or just?
No,
the
sir.
First two pages are substituted.
And I apologize for that. I recognize that we had a description that was not clear on where a couple of these projects were. I have nine projects to present to you this morning from March, April, and a design bill from February. The first project, B20, is the southbound lane of 81 in the vicinity of the Christiansburg interchange between Route 8 and a bit further south. This is a repaving and guardrail safety upgrade project. Only one bid was received. However, it was a very good bid, and we recommend its approval.
I move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Page two.
The second project, or the next project, is B78. This is Route 3, the Robert N. Norris Bridge over the Rappahannock River. This is steel deck grid repairs in the middle of the through truss. Three bids were received on this project, very competitive, and we recommend its approval.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The next project, CO1, is Route 66 westbound lane pavement overlays and guardrail upgrades, safety upgrades, in the vicinity of Goose Creek Bridge. Three bids were received. Again, very good bids, very competitive, and we recommend their approval.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Page three.
The next project is a series of routes in Frederick Warren County and Stanton District, 37, 66, and 81. Only one bid was received. After a careful analysis, we recommend its rejection. If that is adopted, it's our plan to restructure this proposal, repackage it, and it'll come back for re-advertisement later this spring.
I move approval, Mr. Chairman, rejecting the bid.
Second. So the motion is to reject the bid, and there's a second. All in favor of rejecting the bid, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And then page four, which is at your place.
The next project is a design build project from February. This is a re-advertisement of this project in the town of Dillon. It is primarily a drainage and curb and gutter upgrade with various routes intersecting with Route 15. As I indicated, this was the second bid. The first bids were rejected for failure to meet the DBE requirements. I will note that we had the same two bidders. However, there is a reversal of the bids. This bid came in approximately $80,000 less than the first. After careful exam, we recommend its approval to you.
I move approval. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Page 5.
Page 5, the B-56 is Route 295 southbound, pavement overlay and guardrail improvements on 295. We did receive two bids. You'll notice a significant disparity in the price in the program that was set aside for the construction portion and the bids received, and that's reflective of the significant change in asphalt pricing over the past year. Regardless, we recommend that award to you.
Move approval. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And just, that's an important note that Mr. Coburn, would pick up on that? This is the first time since 2002, 2003, that there has been a decline or even a leveling of basic commodity prices.
That's correct, sir. Thank you.
Next item on page 5.
The next item, I'll take a moment, if you will, is a unique project. In retrospect, it is a repaving work, replacement, and patching work. However, this is unique in that it's a part of one of the special programs, Highways for Life, which is an accelerated construction technique pilot that we used with FHWA. Unique in two ways. One, this ends up as 100% federal financing, no state match, as that we were able to use a grant to cover at what would have normally been 20%. The second thing that's unique about this is it's really a type of a best value procurement where we identified a commodity, a number of patches, in this case roughly 11,000 square yards of area that needed to be repaired. We prepared a contract document such that there was a maximum value, $5 million, and the low bid would be determined by the firm who could provide us the most square yards of repair for at the least money. There were three bidders. There was a fourth that was very interested, chose not to bid, and the low bid proposed to replace the entire quantity of the roughly 11,000 square yards for less than the $5 million. So it is a technique that we'll analyze. It has a place in our playbook. It can't be used everywhere, obviously, because it is unique in that fashion. We will evaluate this over its life and determine where we can use this tool in the future. This project is appropriately priced to us, and we recommend its award to you.
Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I want to reinforce what he said about this unique possibilities going forward, and I hope we really look for more of these opportunities. I think it is a good news, strong tool, and I recommend that we accept this award, approve this bid.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Could I just, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cormier, would this be more effective in urban, areas where you have more lane miles, wider surfaces, or is it better in
at first glance it appears that it has application anywhere that you have a commodity that can be stopped still giving you a complete product. So if you had sidewalk repairs that you could, let's say you had 2 miles of sidewalk mm-hmm. you needed to repair, but your bid for your money would only give you a mile and a half, you would have a mile and a half of new sidewalk yeah. and still a section need to be. You couldn't use this for a bridge because you must have a complete bridge.
Yes.
Now, Ms. Coburn, if you're, like we saw one of the earlier bids, a rapid decline in prices where you might actually be able to do more mm-hmm. than originally anticipated, how would that work? Would that be?
That's a twist that we would have to have a provision in that proposal where we could identify and add that additional work to put that money to use.
And again, this is such a unique, and we saw this yesterday in the stimulus package mm-hmm. where the chief engineer has identified a bunch of contingency paving projects. This is a more institutionalized way of doing that if you were able to identify those options actually in the
yes, initial bid.
Okay. Okay, so we voted on this one? I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
We have. Okay, thank you. Page 6.
Page 6, B76 is Route 25. Route 29 in the vicinity of the Gallows Road interchange. This is an advanced project of the interchange, overall interchange, to replace, upgrade the drainage and water system in that area. You'll note that we had 6 bidders, very competitive pricing. We recommend its award.
I recommend its approval, Mr. Chair.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Page 7.
The last item we have is B83. Again, several routes, 64, 81, and 250 in Rockbridge and Augusta County. Asphalt overlay, rumble strips, and other safety upgrades. Although we only had one bidder, it was very competitively priced with other bids that we expected, and we recommend its award to you.
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Coburn. Okay, under new business, I know we have at least two and perhaps a third item. Is there not something for the Richmond District, an acceptance issue? Okay. So you have this in your book, and this is a request for approval of changes of limited access control Interstate 64 to accommodate a portion of Henrico County North Gate and Road Extension Project. Looks like this. Your book. Mr. Bennett, if you could give us a brief description of this.
Yes, sir. Henrico County, using their own funds, is extending Gate and Road from Broad Street over to Ponce Track Road, and they must cross I-64. This is a limited access change to allow them to build a bridge over I-64 with no access to I-64 from that standpoint. So it's a public improvement project, and we're requesting the board's approval of that limited access alteration. The change in the resolution was to change a whereas on the second page to make it clear that the future maintenance responsibility for the bridges and the facilities they build rests with the county.
Any questions, Mr. Bennett?
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of this resolution.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. The next item under new business is a resolution on Route 29. Dr. Tischer is here with some more diplomatic language.
good morning.
I believe the essence of the resolution is to simply say on the 29 study that we will host an additional meeting with the expectation that there will be better attendance from the General Assembly and other elected officials in that corridor. I think that's a fair characterization.
Yes, sir.
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And then, Mr. Schwartz, did you want to bring up Bridgewater Bypass as a resolution under new business?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure that I want to bring it up specifically with respect to Bridgewater bypass. I think the board's spoken on that. But I would like the board to identify a way to look at ways that the Commonwealth can be more proactive when it's making sort of fundamental locations commitments, even where the funding isn't necessarily there. That's obviously a significant step in terms of expectations being created in the vicinity of that particular road investment. And I would like us to look at ways of, in one form or another, seeing if the Commonwealth could in effect enter into a type of contract with the municipalities through which that road would go, that would address on a binding and long-term basis the protection of the asset. Look, as a local elected official myself, I understand the complexities of this when you get into questions of can, for example, one board of supervisors bind another, and there are a lot of complexities here. So it will take some sort of creative outside-the-box thinking, but particularly in the context of the work that many of us are involved in now on the 29 corridor, we can see the huge long-term cost implications of not being proactive on the corridor protection issue. There are potential incentive structures that could be worked into this. I'm not proposing, because I don't have any specific solutions at this time, I think we will be addressing these, I'm sure, in the context of the Route 29 study to some extent, but whether it's as an offshoot of that or whether it's independent but parallel, I do think it's something that we ought to be looking at statewide. And I'll leave to you perhaps to give some thought to the appropriate vehicle or structure in which we can look at this.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your concerns. I guess I think we have a marvelous opportunity with the 29 study. It's one thing to sort of formulate an umbrella policy that really is conceptual in the abstract. It's another thing to try and make it work in a very diverse corridor. So, I mean, my suggestion off the top of my head would be let's try and work within that framework in a real-world environment. When I read the 29 study, and one of the initial questions to Dr. Tischer was, well, you know, we've spent a long time developing and implementing these excess management standards. And so how, if you did an overlay of that, what would that look like within, you know, various aspects of the corridor is kind of a first-order question. I'll bet when we're done with that, we're going to want to say, well, how can we do better than that? And I think that next step gets to how do we enter into an agreement. Presumably there are some teeth to those access management regulations. Perhaps not. And a lot's going to depend on how the property was acquired, and I'll bet at different locations it was acquired in some cases as limited access and others not. Those will be interesting, almost site-specific kinds of questions. But I think we ought to use that as a learning experience, because there's a lot of diversity in that corridor. It's a perfect example of where excess management can save us a lot of money, getting that balance between the local land use and the state investment decision. I believe it's very, very important.
And Mr. Chairman, the one thing I would add to that is the decision to locate a new road is, in my view, a unique opportunity to work out commitments I'm not sure we'll really address that part of it in the Route 29 study, because we're sort of beyond that.
I see. So your question is, again, on the
location study. So I'm taking it a step further.
Location study. Okay.
And maybe an initial part of that, and I recognize that all of our staff is very, very busy, but maybe an initial step that could be looked at over the next few months or something like that is if there is anybody on your staff who could perhaps formulate a memo that at least gives us a baseline of the legal implications of what can and can't be done in this situation, and looks at, as you suggested, the ways in which, for example, when you identify a future corridor like this, the ways in which right-of-way is acquired, and whether there's some potential there to structure those acquisitions in ways that better protect the asset in the long term. I think there are some legal implications to this, and if we had some background on that, that might be the basis for a discussion that we could then have.
Sure. Okay. That's an excellent idea.
I just want to second the importance of this issue. I know in our original VTrans, we tried to cover many topics, but certainly access management and also the potential reservation of right-of-way, which I now know there are legal obstacles to, but the fact that we can't identify roadways very far ahead and reserve the land. We're very limited in our tools there, but also this aspect of the access management, I think, is absolutely key to preservation of our system. And I know it was certainly a point we did address in the original VTrans, but I think it would also be a very important component to move us along. And so let's be sure all these things are coordinated, as I'm sure Dr. Tischer is aware of. But this is an area of significant importance, I think.
And I think a great opportunity, actually, a combination of land use acquisition, land use decisions, and technology is another aspect in certain locations. Certain kinds of traffic control signals can really help us achieve that goal. Without objection, we'll go ahead, and I would suggest perhaps Mr. Donahue and Mr. Walton working together on something and coming back in a couple of months with some discussion on those items.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. The last item is really a carryover from the work session, which is future direction of the board. And I know some folks need to go, so if folks need to hit the road, please feel free to do so. But I think, you know, there are a couple of things I just would like to point out, really in anticipation of next month of the six-year program. It is going to be as difficult as the June and the February process was. In some ways, this will be even more painful. What we will have to do in order to, again, you stand back and look at the overall, in particular the VDOT budget, we've got a pretty healthy transit and rail program. The highway side is not healthy. And so much of the state dollars have to come off the top to fund maintenance and operations. We have maximized available federal dollars for maintenance and operations. Within the six-year program, which is the construction element, now actually that's, you know, a fairly small part of the overall highway program, in order to meet just the ability to capture existing federal dollars, we are going to have to go back, and I think most of you are aware, but Ms. Busher and her staff, in consultation with the district engineers, we're going to have to go back and revisit projects on which there are pre-existing allocations. And so something that perhaps some of you may have been working on, trying to build up funds over a period of years, if they are not ready to go to construction, those funds are probably going to be gone. And so that's, I think will be very painful in a couple of instances. A second aspect of where we are, you know, so much of since 1986 of transportation, and again more so on the highway side, has been sending so much back to regions and particular localities through the urban and the secondary program. In February, we took the few remaining state dollars out of secondary and urban allocations. It's my guess, the arithmetic still has yet to be done on that, that there are still a few remaining federal dollars going through those distribution formulas, that those will also be gone. That will be the end of the secondary and urban programs. And the only funding available there will be for projects that are either, you know, under a contractual commitment with VDOT, and there are some interlocal agreements, or there are a couple of places where, for example, we've agreed to pay debt service
on existing projects. We need to honor those commitments. There may be a local government contract, so we will avoid impairment of contract. But those will be a minute set of exemptions rather than the rules. On the positive side, and we always have to look at that, I do think that some of the things that the commissioner has gone through with his blueprint that the chief engineer has developed for putting together the stimulus package, if indeed what we have is just a statewide program and there's not the normal rules of allocation, then we have to invent very fact-based allocation mechanisms. And so I think the pavement allocation, where we looked at and set a standard of a pavement rating of, say, 53 or less, and certain conditions associated with permitting are very important. The same thing with figuring out bridges, finding out what are the worst bridges really on a statewide basis. Those kinds of techniques are going to be very important. I think that is going to put some real stress on this body, because ultimately this body will have to strike a regional and an advocacy set of balances, particularly if we're looking at dealing with the worst pavement and bridges on a statewide basis. So I say that to you in anticipation of that. This is supposed to be a look down the road, but this is what the program will be like going forward, and the future is going to be here in about 30 days. And so I just throw that out by way of managing expectations a little bit, but getting you all to think about the future of the program. This is a recurrent item. The last thing I would mention, we have tried to have, and we weren't able this month, but just about every month, have a major topical issue with the V-Trans document. I see that as a very, very important legacy of this board. And so, for example, the thing that Mr. Schwartz has just mentioned, there's been some work in that direction, crystallizing that in that way, I think would be an outstanding contribution. Coming down to the 10 or 12 most important investments of the Commonwealth in transportation, us making those hard choices and priorities will be very important. I think in particular, and Mr. Dickens and I have talked a little bit about, I think Hampton Roads as a region faces some very, very unique challenges, both economically and the presence of the port and the delicacy of maintaining and growing the military in Hampton Roads region. Those are the kinds of things that we'll need to be looking at and balancing. And some of the things that we have grown up thinking about are the most important things may fall off the table if we say there are 10 to 12 key issues and investments facing us. So I throw that out and welcome commentary.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of weeks ago I was at an annual environmental conference that's held every year at VMI. We get about 750, 800 people representing government, businesses, nonprofits, citizens. It is the best conference of its kind that I have ever been to, and it gets better every year. And this year there was a principal focus on climate change issues, and we had some of the world-class thinkers and doers present to talk to us. One of the things that keeps coming up, and you and your deputy saw this during the Climate Change Commission last year, is that Hampton Roads, the Navy, the municipalities, the people are extremely vulnerable to the effects of climate change in Virginia. And one of the consequences of being vulnerable is what to do about it. And one of the things, of course, the default position for some people is to start building things to protect against the rising sea levels that are forecast to occur. Even at conservative lowest levels, it's still pretty amazing. And I just throw that out, that somewhere in our six-year planning process, we may have to deal with that. Because our road system and our port and the whole Navy complex down there is forecasted to be imperiled, and we cannot let that go without notice. And I don't know where that fits into our planning in V-Trans or somewhere else, but it means it's going to cost a ton of money to somebody to do something about. And I would just say, if we keep going down this rabbit hole of shrinking resources and no indication that anybody wants to vote for increasing those resources. We are putting the entire Hampton Roads area in great jeopardy because of what's coming down the road. And I know that only makes things look worse, but the fact is this is coming our way. You can see it just like a hurricane. And if we sit here with our heads in the sand the way the General Assembly has on that issue by not even allowing legislation containing the words climate change to be introduced, we are in more serious trouble than we realize. So I hope this body, if no place else, will start addressing climate change implications for transportation in Virginia.
Mr. Chairman, follow on what Mr. McCarthy said, I heard the other day, and maybe you can confirm this, I heard somebody say the other day that Hampton Roads is the 10th most vulnerable region in the world for climate change.
Yes, it is a world-class endangered place. It is literally on the list of the most endangered places in the world as a result of climate change. This is really getting serious now.
And only New Orleans is in this country is worse than Hampton Roads. But to follow on with what you're saying, and you're exactly right, and what you've said is exactly right, there some of the biggest economic engines that impact the entire Commonwealth are in Hampton Roads, and all of them, primarily the port and the military, are significantly impacted by transportation or congestion. So I concur with exactly what you're saying and suggest that we need to start looking at that. And I would further say that as we go forward in our allocation of these limited funds that we have, that we need to look at congestion relief. With all due respect to those who don't have congestion, the allocation of funds across the state has become an issue when you look at the congestion and the level of service of the roads in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads and some other places as well. But when the funds get as limited as they are, I think it's time for us to start considering looking at how we allocate them in that regard. And one thing I wanted to ask about is and I saw a guardrail project here. Do we have a policy on how we spend money on guardrail and noise abatement issues? Is that a big part of our budget?
I'm going to hazard guess. Noise abatement is part of a construction project. There are the occasional, and you've seen some down at Hampton Roads where sound walls are either being replaced. When they get replaced, they have to meet the current noise wall standards. My understanding on guardrail, Commissioner or Ms. Sorrell, is that if one of the drivers in this is the introduction of federal dollars into the maintenance program, and when federal dollars are used for an asphalt overlay, then you have to bring everything up to current federal standards, and that oftentimes includes guardrail markings and other issues.
Well, I have the floor, may I make one other comment? The gentleman, Mr. Bell from Nansman Suffolk Academy, makes a point that we've had a number of discussions about over the last year or so. I've been there, I've walked that property, and the alignment that we have of 460 essentially cuts their property in half, makes a big part of it essentially unusable unless you're going under an interstate. And I don't think there's an elevation projected in that project. To make it even more interesting is the intersection alignment looks to be very, very difficult. And to add even another element to it, the proposed path of 460 cuts right through a major parcel of land that is projected for some major development. So that there's a lot of interesting issues related to that alignment that another alignment would alleviate. And I know when I first came on the board, we had a scenario where a road was going through a neighborhood, and we had an opportunity to look at it, and we were able to move it so that it didn't impact so negatively on the community. And I think we all decided it was a better approach. And I'm asking if there's an opportunity for us to look at that segment of 460 that cuts through Nance and Suffolk's property and intersects with 58 there to re-engineer it, or maybe look at a better opportunity there.
Strikes me, Mr. Dickens, this is why CTV members are so highly paid.
Yes, sir.
I think a conversation with Mr. Walton is probably in order on that. There are a couple of locations throughout that 460 corridor where a little wiggle could help to solve some problems. I do think that particular intersection and relationship to adjacent properties ties back to the port intermodal facilities. I mean, there's a lot going on there. I agree with that, and that may take, you know, some time and some thought and some care to work through some of those issues. But probably a good idea for you to work through Mr. Hewer and Mr. Walton to see what is a possibility there. And just as Mr. Schwartz was talking about with the land use on that other. What's on the city's land use plan at that location? That's in Suffolk, correct?
Correct.
And is there a way of advantaging the free flow of freight out of the port to some of those intermodal facilities that are ones already fully rezoned and permitted in western Suffolk? We know there is interest in other locations throughout that 460 corridor as well. Let's take advantage of that and do it right.
Thank you.
Ms. Kuhlman.
Mr. Chairman, I think we've heard enough bad news, so I just wanted to offer one piece of good news. I was impressed to read that Virginia's production of grapes is up 25%. And I think it's just in time. So I just wanted to offer that as a potential balancer of some of the decisions that we have to take.
And Virginia's wineries now number over more than 140 throughout this commonwealth.
As Mr. McCarthy reminds us on a monthly basis,
yes.
In vino veritas. So, any other questions or comments under new business? Really appreciate the time of the board. This is, you know, there's been some very big decisions made yesterday and today, and they will color for a long time the future of the Commonwealth. Next month, and there may be an interim meeting between now and then. The next two meetings are going to be very substantial in terms of the future, not just transportation, but the day-to-day life of the Commonwealth.
Mr. Secretary, I just would like to acknowledge Commissioner Eckert and his staff, because here we're cutting back and doing all these tough decisions, we think, but they're the ones who actually are doing the doing the footwork right now, and particularly Ms. Busher's staff. I know they're working very long hours, and it's very hard to spend money, as we mentioned before, spend it very as rapidly as you possibly could with one hand and then try to find enormous savings in the other hand. And I just want to tell them that their long hours and time is greatly appreciated.
Thank you. I know that sentiment shared by every member of the board. If there's no further business, the meeting is adjourned.